The Husky Post Game Show is sponsored by Sam Heller Men's Clothing, featuring nationally advertised top quality menswear at a price you want to pay. Sam Heller, 1 mile south of South Center in Parkway Plaza.
This is KIRO Seattle, News Radio 7, the news authority. Keep in touch at the 7 on your radio dial.
CBS News. Anthony Karitsis is in the hands of Indianapolis police. Richard Hall, the real estate company executive he had held hostage at gunpoint for 3 days, is free and apparently unhurt. I'm Christopher Glenn, reporting on the CBS radio network. The siege in Indianapolis lasted 62 hours. It ended shortly after Karitsis emerged from the apartment where he had been holding Hall, still enraged because, he said, Hall's company had cheated him on a mortgage deal. Karitsis ranted and cursed through a news conference, all the while holding a shotgun at Hall's neck. Then he marched his captive into a room police had been using for a headquarters during the siege. Moments later, Hall was either released or broke free, and moments after that, Karitsis was in custody. There was a shotgun blast along the way, but apparently Karitsis simply fired into the air, saying, "I've wanted to fire this thing ever since I've had it." He seemed disbelieving as he was led away in handcuffs. Earlier, he had been promised immunity from prosecution. But the police said Karitsis had violated the terms of that agreement because he had not freed Hall, as he had promised to do, before leaving the apartment to talk with reporters. More CBS News in a minute.
Do you like hamburgers?
Yes, yes.
Well, I'm going to tell you about my favorite hamburger called Big Brazier.
Big Brazier?
It's from the Dairy Queen Brazier store.
Dairy Queen.
That's right, and it's as scrumptilicious as anything you ever ate.
Scrumptilicious?
And it's a quarter pound, and it's all beef, and it's in a toasted sesame seed bun, and I'm going to keep on eating Big Braziers all I want.
Yeah.
But you know what I won't do?
What?
I won't stop going to the Dairy Queen with you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep on liking licking a Dairy Queen cone. I'm gonna keep on eating Sunday after I'm grown. I want to do big for Brazier burgers and hot dogs too. And I won't stop going to the Dairy Queen with you. Let's all go to the Dairy Queen.
Let's all go to the Dairy Queen.
Who controls the jobs for the House Assassinations Committee? The question arose Thursday when the committee chairman attempted to dump the committee's chief counsel, as we hear in this report from Jibby Martinez of CBS affiliate WOAI in San Antonio.
Texas Congressman Henry Gonzalez tried to fire chief counsel Richard Sprague because he says Sprague was breaking House rules by spending too much money without justification. Later, a majority of the committee told Sprague to disregard the firing. However, Gonzalez says it's his responsibility.
If he wishes to come around and work for free, that's his business. But as far as my signing any pay voucher for any salaries for the Sprague plague, I'm not going to do it.
Chairman Gonzalez says Sprague has a reputation of loading down expenses that someone else has to pay. He says the issue is not between Sprague and Gonzalez, but between Sprague and the committee if the committee is going to live. Jibby Martinez for CBS News, San Antonio.
Congressman Gonzalez returned to Texas from the Capitol Thursday evening. Gunfire sounded in Beirut and other locations in Lebanon Thursday. Police called the shooting in Beirut one of the worst outbreaks since the Lebanese Civil War ended in November and said at least 12 civilians were wounded. Doug Sefton reports an increase in military activity elsewhere in the country.
Eyewitness reports claim that Christian forces attempted to advance westward toward Nabatea, southernmost location of the largely Syrian peacekeeping force. The Syrian presence that close to the Israeli border is a constant irritation to the Israelis. There are no indications, however, that Syrians were involved in the fighting. From all accounts, the heavy shelling was done by Christian forces on one side and Palestinian and leftist Lebanese forces on the other. Most merchants in Nabatea shuttered their shops and schools in the area closed for the day. Many of the people of Nabatea fled the town, taking refuge in nearby, safer villages. Doug Sefton, CBS News, Beirut.
And we'll have more CBS News after this message.
When I was a little kid, I didn't worry at all about taxes, but my daddy did. Then, when I graduated from high school, I started to earn money and pay taxes myself.
actually earned enough to take some business courses. And then I opened my own carryout shop. Eventually, that one shop became 14 carryouts spread all over the city. Well, now I'm retired. And since I'm over 65, I'm eligible for special income tax benefits, like an extra $750 exemption, special provisions when I sell my home, and even a credit for the elderly. The Internal Revenue Service has a free booklet that tells you all about tax benefits for older Americans. Use the coupon inside your tax package to order it. You'll be surprised how much help it'll give you. Sure helped me.
Well, if you say so, Granddaddy.
I say so.
The president of India, Fakhruddin Ali Ahmed, has died of a heart attack just a day after returning from an official visit to Malaysia, where doctors had said he was suffering extreme exhaustion. Ahmed was 71 years old and a loyal supporter of Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. He won more than 80% of the vote in elections in 1974 to become India's fifth president, an office which is, in that country, largely ceremonial. I'm Christopher Glenn, CBS News.
Cairo News Time, 10:06.
Listen, and see if you can describe this man in one word. He's a man who comes home and turns on every light in the house. Then he turns on the radio. Now he turns up the heat to 80 degrees and goes down to his shop to use his electric saw. He then comes back to the kitchen to turn on a couple more electric appliances. Now he shaves with his electric razor. Finally, he turns on the TV set and plops himself down. Yes, there's one word to describe people who waste electricity like this. But then, you already know what that word is. For a free booklet that could save you money on your electric heat and light bill, contact Seattle City Light now. Read it and pass it on to anybody who's gobbling up more than his fair share of electricity.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. A Chinese proverb holds that nobody's family can hang out the sign, "Nothing the matter here." There's wisdom in that, don't you agree? Think about your own family. Isn't there at least one skeleton lurking in your closet? At some time and for some reason, it will surely reveal itself. The consequences have raised Cain with ruling powers, business, and even love between two persons. That is why Dr. Tom Lodge, a young resident in a Boston hospital, has long safeguarded a dark family secret from his wife, Nancy.
Tom, what are you hiding?
Nothing, darling.
Now, that doesn't ring true. We don't have secrets between us. Or do we?
All right, now look, don't get on your high horse.
Well, then don't treat me like a child. What have you done? Are you married to someone else? Is there a girl you left behind you? Did you kill someone on a hunting trip? Oh, Tom, please, tell me. I have a right to know.
Our mystery drama, The Recluse, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Roy Windsor and stars Tony Roberts and Patricia Elliott. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The standard engine is a V8. Standard tires, steel-belted radials. There are front and rear stabilizer bars, special springs and shock valving, fast ratio power steering, and a rally steering wheel. What makes all this interesting is that it belongs to a full-size six-passenger Buick, the 1977 LeSabre Sport Coupe. You'll have to drive it to believe it.
In a distant land lives a little girl named Mary Lou, one of the lucky few. In her world, starvation, disease, and despair were facts of life. Now, thanks to foster parents' plan, she goes to school with clean clothes and enjoys decent food and medical care, benefits shared by her whole family. Become a foster parent for just $19 a month. You may change the way you feel about the world, about yourself. Write for information to Foster Parents Plan, Box 402A, Warwick, Rhode Island, 02887.
Internal Revenue Service.
Hey, I got a tip for you guys.
On which taxpayer, please?
Bob Warner.
Oh, Bob Warner. Yes, what's your tip?
This guy claims he's just a small businessman, right? But you want to know something? He's got to be making a fortune. Only last week, he sold 10 Corvette Stingrays, half a dozen Mercedes Benzes, and a very rare Model T.
You don't say.
Yeah, and this week, he's already sold a bunch of 240 Zs, a 6 or 7 Ferraris, and a vintage Rolls Royce.
Well, now is that the Bob Warner who does business at 619 Southwest 152nd in Burien?
That's the guy.
Well, your government is grateful for the information, sir. Tell me, how do you happen to know he sold all those cars?
Because I bought them, and it's gonna take me months to build them all, and I'm gonna love it, do you hear? I'm gonna love it! Warner owns Burien Hobby Center.
When we are young, family, especially our immediate family, is to us the world in microcosm. And we know that we are part of a self-contained unit in which we are fed, clothed, and protected. When we become adults, however, we can view our parents and relatives more objectively. Uncle Bill never was really that amusing, was he? And why did Father always unthinkingly vote the straight ticket? Because he read only the sport pages. And so family unity becomes subject to the strains of objective thinking, as we are about to find out.
I'm home, darling.
So you are. What a treat. Give me a kiss. What happened? It's only 6 o'clock. Did the patient die?
You're too much, Nancy. Hey, something smells good.
Stew. Or call it bœuf bourguignon. It's all the same.
Oh, that's a sacrilege, and you know better. And no, the patient did not die. It was a hot appendix, and she'll be up on her feet tomorrow. Now, what's the news of the day?
Well, not good.
My mother?
No. No, arthritis is wicked, but I don't think it's a killer. No, it's your grandmother in White River. She died this afternoon. Your mother called.
I see.
Your mother wants us to attend the funeral. She can't.
Well, neither can I. I just can't up and leave the hospital. My mother should know that.
Well, somebody has to represent the family, and your mother and you are the only living relatives. You can't not go, Tom. You seem so unfeeling. After all, she is your grandmother.
I know, I know.
Didn't you like her? I thought everyone liked his grandmother.
Oh, sure, but...
You really adored her, didn't you?
Oh, come off it, Nancy.
Well, first your mother sounded if she didn't care that her mother had died, and now here you are not caring either and feeling that her death is an imposition.
Hey, what are you so worked up about over this old lady? I mean, you never even met her.
Maybe I'm lucky. What was Mrs. Schuyler, some kind of witch?
Let it go.
Why won't you talk about her, Tom?
Look, I don't remember her very well. I've kind of lost track. Hey, look. Let's have our...
Supper will keep. You realize, don't you, that the more you evade the subject, the more you arouse my curiosity. Now, tell me about your grandmother.
Well, the Schuyler family has been in White River for hundreds of years, dating from before they built the inn, a place named Riverfront. My grandmother's lived there all her life.
An old inn? Oh, like the ones you see on the book covers of Gothic novels?
Yeah, something like that. It's on the edge of the river, and it's more than 100 years old. 20 rooms. Most of them were closed off when the inn was closed to travelers.
And you explored every one of them, didn't you?
As a matter of fact, I did.
But you don't remember her very well. Isn't that what you said? Okay, Doctor, what's the mystery?
There is none. Really. Grandma lived in 3 rooms, never went out. She's been a recluse since my mother and I left.
Why? Heartbroken to see you go?
No, not exactly. Hey, how about dropping the subject?
No, siree. There's a skeleton in the family closet, and I want to know what it is, and I'll find out tomorrow.
Pardon?
When we reach White River.
Now, look.
It's all decided. We're driving up for the funeral.
But...
No but about it. What is this dark secret?
It goes to the grave with her. My grandmother's death has laid that skeleton to rest. Forever. You stay here, Nancy, in the waiting room, huh?
I'm not sitting here while Mr. Martin reads you the will. As your wife, I'm entitled to know the provisions of your grandmother's will.
Oh, what am I going to do with you? All right, all right. Come in, come in.
Come in, Dr. Lodge. Ah, Mrs. Lodge.
See? He expects me in his office.
Well, it's nice to see you again, Tom.
Thank you, sir. My wife, Nancy.
How do you do?
Hello.
Well, sit down, if you please. It's been several years, Tom.
Yes, sir. 6.
And you're a doctor in a big Boston hospital.
Oh, a resident.
How interesting. I telephoned your mother. She couldn't
be here for the funeral. Yes, arthritis. She's pretty much confined to her house.
Yes, so she told me. Tasteful service. Simple, but reverent.
Thank you for attending, Mr. Martin.
Well, your grandmother was my client and a friend. You didn't know her, Mrs. Lodge?
No, only by hearsay.
Is that so? Hearsay, indeed. Well,
Tom's told me that she was a recluse.
Well, I suppose she had become so. Of course, she was an old woman and set in her ways.
And what were those, if I may ask, Mr. Martin?
My grandmother was austere, self-righteous, and unforgiving. She turned her back on my mother and me 6 years ago, and we've never heard from her since. We learned not to care.
Oh. Why, Tom?
She never forgave my mother for marrying my father. Grandma considered him several cuts below her social level. Now, let's forget what's past and hear what Mr. Martin has to say.
Yes. Well, the provisions of her will are clear and simple. You, Tom, inherit her entire estate.
The old inn and the 15 acres surrounding it?
And the small house where Mrs. Meggs lives.
Tom, it's a fortune.
Well, I don't know about that, but... Well, the land is valuable, but the inn...
Well, it's in bad disrepair.
And useless.
I'm afraid that your grandmother let it go over the past few years. It's weather-worn and rotted.
And mice have replaced the ghosts of all those old travelers. Well, it'll have to be raised and the land sold.
Yes. Your grandmother left a codicil to her will, Tom, in her handwriting. Whatever is realized from the sale of the inn and the land is to be paid to the bank.
But why? Was she in debt? Is that the skeleton in the lodge closet, Tom?
Why don't we just leave it that way, Nancy?
Yes, it might be best, Mrs. Lodge.
But it's not the truth, is it? A woman like your grandmother, why would she get herself into debt? And over what?
Well, a family matter.
So it wasn't her debt. Tom, was it yours?
Look, darling, it's really unimportant.
I don't think it is. I want to understand what this is about. Did you know about this indebtedness? Is that why you and your mother lost touch with your grandmother?
Well, I'll file the will for probate, Tom. Do you want me to dispose of the inn and the land and carry out your grandmother's last wish?
Yes, I'd appreciate it, Mr. Martin.
Tom, how did you get into debt and for how much? I really do have a right to know.
If you persist, Nancy, you will regret the day you said, yes, I'll marry you.
Darling, no matter what you did, I'll never regret that decision.
You'd better tell her, Mr. Martin.
Yes, perhaps I should. Well, Tom's father was assistant cashier at the Merchants Bank over there across the street. Now, 6 years ago, in February 1970, Tom's father...
My father stole $70,000 from his bank and disappeared and neither have been seen since, him or the money. Now, are you satisfied?
Oh, Tom, darling.
My mother and I were so ashamed that we slunk out of White River, and I'd hoped I'd never have to come back here and face the old neighbors. The sins of the father.
How cruel. Your grandmother renounced your mother and you for something your father did?
Well, that was my grandmother's way. And now, in the codicil to her will, she makes me responsible to see that her estate is sold and the proceeds paid to the bank. I still can't be free of what my father did. I'm still made to feel guilty because he grabbed a bundle and flew the coop. Now, do you understand why I didn't want to come here for the funeral? And why I hope my father has already had his.
Sit down, Rufe.
A cold wind. Coming on to snow.
A cup of hot tea would do you good.
Yeah. Nice of Tom to invite me to the funeral.
He always was nice as a boy.
Yeah, and nice wife, too. What happened now, Lil? You got any idea?
He'll sell, is my guess. Except for Tom and his mother, the old lady was the last of the line.
Yeah, last of Schuyler family. Well, I can't complain, but it makes me feel kind of peculiar. I won't be working the land no more. 40 years. Now, how about you, Lil? You pulling up stakes? Ain't your sister Faye someplace south, Lauderdale?
I'm thinking about it.
After all you did for the old woman over the years, I thought maybe she'd leave something to you. It's a nice little house, I'd say.
Not her ladyship. She was a tight one. Well, I better get up to the inn and light a fire for him.
Every once in a while on a snowy night, I wonder what happened to him, Lil.
To the father?
Yeah. Snowbound, the car found stuck in the snow next morning. No sign of him or the money. Where'd he get to, Lil?
All I remember is he stormed out of the inn and disappeared.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Gone. Without a trace.
My goodness.
Oh, it's just Rufe's dog. I'll chain him up in the barn.
Thanks, Mrs. Meggs.
Anything else I can do? I left bacon and eggs in the refrigerator and there's...
Oh, nothing. Thank you. It's fine.
Well, then I'll say goodnight and get back while I can see my way. We'll have snow. I wouldn't wander around, Tom. The old place is falling apart and some of the floors ain't too firm. I'll say goodnight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodnight.
Goodnight,
Mrs. Meggs. Ooh. Creepy.
I hate this place. There's been a pall over it ever since what happened. I'll tell you one thing, Nancy. I am not spending the night in this mausoleum.
What did happen to your father? How could he have gotten away?
Search me. The police went all over the inn for days. There was no trace of him.
You lived here as a boy?
Yeah, sure. My friends and I used to play games here. You know, hide and seek. I remember those days.
And you were the hero. I mean, did you ever hide where no one could find you?
Oh, well, there were lots of places. Cubby holes, one room with a false wall, trap doors and some ceilings. It's a wonder one of us was never found.
Maybe that's what happened, Tom.
Huh?
But did you have a special hiding place? You knew the old inn better than anybody else.
Good Lord. The sealed room.
The what?
Yeah, the sealed room beneath the long clothes closet off the entry hall. Oh, but... No, it's impossible.
Is it? If your father couldn't have gotten away because of the snowstorm, he must still be here.
Or what's left of him.
Well, what have we here? Old deeds have a way of coming to light, and the skeleton in your closet can be made to rattle because of an inquiring mind. If a major premise and a minor premise are true, so is the logical conclusion. Tom Lodge's father disappeared. It was impossible for him to have left the old inn. Therefore, He never left the inn. I will return shortly with Act Two.
I was a peaceful, ordinary citizen, brutally tortured by the Gestapo, hounded by the British, chased by the French. And to survive, I, Thomas Lyven, was reluctantly transformed into Europe's most notorious undercover agent.
Read this incredible story in the Monte Cristo cover-up, a powerful thriller by one of the world's best red fiction writers, Simmel. Over 2 million copies in print. The Monte Cristo cover-up in paperback from Popular Library.
Here in my hand is a little capsule. It's Contact. It contains enough cold medicine to help relieve cold symptoms caused by every known virus. Think about that the next time you're sick. Sneezing, dripping, all clogged up. Then let us help you with real medicine, like Contact. We're number one in the whole world.
Give your cold to Contact. Real medicine for real cold.
Take only as direct.
All of us and the staff at Acacia Memorial Park have been thoroughly trained to do our jobs in a way that will make things easiest for the families who come to us. We have to be very sensitive to human needs in order to do our job. We've done everything we can to accomplish this, from groundskeepers to the office staff.
You're listening to Bob Anthony of Acacia Memorial Park.
Another strong point is the factor of convenience. We're located 20 minutes from downtown Seattle, 5 minutes from Lake City, and close to freeways. The site of the park is one of the most beautiful in the area and overlooks Lake Washington from the north. The park is easily accessible by either metro or county bus lines. There's also the convenience of having a funeral home on the grounds. This eliminates the need for lengthy procession across town, although Acacia serves all the Seattle area funeral homes. We're proud of the convenience and the human factor at Acacia.
Acacia Memorial Park and Funeral Home, just north of Lake City on Bothell Way Northeast.
It is unusual and unlikely for a person to disappear and never be heard of again. Exceptions are rare. Rip Van Winkle, to be sure, but that was fantasy. Dr. Livingston, and that was fact, both were presumed to be lost, but after their disappearance, neither was accused of a crime. Tom Lodge's father was. He absconded with $70,000, and therein lies a difference. He was a criminal and in danger. What happened to him? Tom Lodge hopes to find out.
Strike another match, Nancy, and I'll let myself down the ladder.
Haven't we got a flashlight?
In the car. I'll get it later. I want to see if anything's in there right now.
You could slip and break a leg, Tom.
No. The ladder is strong. Strike a match. There it is. It's really black down here. I can't see a thing.
Well, I'll hand the matches to you. I'm flat on the floor on my stomach. Reach up.
Okay. Now, let me see.
Oh, darling, be careful.
Don't worry. Oh, there's the pot-bellied stove and the wood scuttle. A chair. Small table. Cot. Good Lord.
Oh, what is it, Tom? Tom, answer me.
I'm coming up.
Tom?
Yeah. Look, let's get back to the common room.
Tell me, did you... Is there something there?
My father. His bones. A clothed skeleton.
Oh, how horrible.
I've got to think.
You said that the police went all over the inn, Tom. How could they have missed the sealed room?
I don't know. Nobody remembered it, probably.
Well, what was it for?
The caretaker. Back around the turn of the century, he acted as a registration clerk and a handyman, and he lived down there.
In that hole in the ground?
Yes. It's a real room with flooring and walls of wood, and it was very snug and warm. After he closed the inn for the night, he lifted the trapdoor in the long closet in the hall and pulled it closed after him.
I see. Then the flooring in the closet was covered over.
With carpeting, and that sealed it off.
Unless a person knew a room was down there, he'd never find it.
But you did, as a boy. Was the floor covered over then?
I don't think so. No.
So, the carpeting was laid over the trapdoor recently. 6 years ago? Right after your father disappeared?
Yeah.
Your grandmother must have known about the room, Tom.
Yes, of course.
Would Mrs. Meggs have known about the sealed room?
I don't know. Why?
Well, who was here the night your father disappeared?
No one. My grandmother and Mrs. Meggs. And, of course, my father.
Your father stole money. He came here, and 6 years later we find his remains in a sealed room. Why did he hide? And why did he die?
I can't answer those questions, Nancy. We'll never know the answers.
I know one of them. He came here and told your grandmother he'd stolen money from his bank. Why would he tell her?
No idea.
What if he'd been dipping into your grandmother's money and was caught and stole from the bank in order to replace it?
Oh, that's far out.
Well, your grandmother refused the money. That's why she wanted the proceeds from her estate to go to the bank, to help repay a debt of honor.
Hey, that's pretty far-fetched, darling.
Maybe. I have the answer to another one of my questions. Your father hid here because he couldn't get away. Was he a healthy man, Tom?
Yes. Why?
How did he die? There he was, safe in the sealed room. Did he have a stroke, a heart attack? Did somebody bring him food?
Mrs. Meggs?
Could be. Tom, get the flashlight and let's examine that room carefully. Oh, I feel like I'm in a tomb.
It's my father, all right. Look, where I'm shining the light, you see this break in the skull?
Oh.
Now, that's how he died, Nancy. He was struck a hard blow. He was murdered. And look at this. His watch.
Huh.
See, the strap's rotted, but it's his watch, all right. Look, his initials are on the back.
Oh, let's get out of here.
In a minute. Now, it's my turn to ask a question. What became of the money? The 70 grand.
Well, whoever murdered him took it. That was the motive.
Yeah, but it was hot money, Nancy. It was hard to use for a long time. And the sealed room would be an ideal place to hide it.
Where? Where could it be hidden?
And I went over the mattress on the cot. It's not there. And the small closet is empty. Well, let me see.
In the stove?
Yeah, why not?
Tom!
How about that? Look at this wad of money.
Wrapped in oilskin. Oh, I'm afraid, Tom. Leave that money and close off the room.
Well, there's only 15,000. 55,000 is gone. Someone squirreled it away.
Tom, let's go back to the hotel and think it through.
Okay. I'll telephone my mother. Maybe she'll know the answers to some of our questions. Gee, you are scared, aren't you, darling?
Of course I am. Someone committed a murder for money. We found it. If the murderer discovers that we know, he may try to kill us.
There, Shark. Down, boy, down.
Thanks, Lou. Have a chance to talk with Tom?
Nothing to talk about, Ruth. What's on your mind?
Well, if you don't sell the land, maybe I could tenant farm it for him.
I'd say he'd want to sell.
Yeah. Well, if I had two dimes to rub together, I'd buy it.
Oh, you can always get work, Ruth, so you said.
Yeah.
Will you change your mind?
Oh, I've been thinking about it, that's all. I'm getting on. The winters around here are mighty rugged. I wonder if they could use me down south.
Sure. An experienced field hand like you, I'd say so. Why, what you got you thinking about moving south?
I guess you did, Lil. Talking about your sister down in Lauderdale. That's where you're going, ain't it?
Oh, I think so. Of course, if the old lady had left me the house. But she didn't. You got money laid aside?
Ooh, a little.
I could help you out, Ruth. not with much, but enough to give you a stake.
Well, now, it's mighty nice of you, Lil. When are you thinking of heading on down south?
Soon as I can sell my furniture and pack. We could spell each other at the wheel.
Yeah. Well, I'd like that.
Then it's settled.
Well, I'll be back after I make quick inspection about the inn. If the snow's piling up, maybe I could drive Tom's car down here and put it in the barn. Otherwise, it might get stuck in the morning.
Yes, that's true. It's happened before.
Yep, I remember. Tom's father. Chains. That's what you need in heavy snow. Mr. Martin had them.
The lawyer?
Yeah. He left that night around 10 o'clock. I saw him drive away. Chains. That's what got him through. You didn't know he'd been to the inn.
Thanks, Mother. This has been very helpful.
Well?
My father did manage my grandmother's money, and he had begun to dip into it. So he dipped into the bank to repay her. That's why he absconded with all that money.
How did he think he'd get away with robbing the bank?
Oh, who knows?
Your grandmother must have been furious.
Well, it was through her that he got his job at Merchants.
He must have loved your mother very much.
Yes. Well, I'm afraid he wasn't much of a banker.
Oh, it's all tragic, and they're both dead because a willful old matriarch couldn't form him into her own image.
Well, let's pay a visit to Mr. Martin, huh? I'll turn this money over to him, and he can give it to the bank.
$15,000? What about the rest?
It's gone. Can't be traced now.
I wonder. The snow's beautiful.
You won't think so if it doesn't light up, darling. Driving is no fun in the North Country.
Come in.
Thank you. Forgive us for calling at your home.
Well, perfectly all right.
Oh, what a charming room.
Thank you. Well,
let me get right to the point, Mr. Martin. I found the remains of my father in a sealed room.
What? Your father?
He'd been murdered.
In heaven's name.
And here is $15,000 of the $70,000 he stole from the bank.
Oh, you stagger me, Tom.
Well, he didn't disappear. He was murdered and hidden in the sealed room, and the money, most of it, was taken away. I came to you.
Well, of course. I'll notify the police in the morning.
Not tonight. We're in danger, Mr. Martin.
Danger? I don't see how.
Well, if the murderer finds out what we've discovered, he'll come after us.
Well, who knows about your discovery?
Well, no one. Except you, of course.
You didn't speak to Mrs. Meggs?
No.
Why not?
Well, we think that she must know something about all this. She was in the house the night my father vanished. You know that, Mr. Martin.
I do.
Well, that's what my mother says. I talked to her half an hour ago, and she had had it from Ruth Box.
She'd had what from Ruth?
That you were at the inn. He saw you drive away.
Oh, that. Well, yes, now that you remind me, I'd driven out to see your grandmother, but I left quite early.
May I ask a question? I don't mean to be impertinent, but were you aware that Tom's father was stealing from his mother-in-law?
Well, goodness, no.
You didn't check her account periodically?
Well, very seldom. I thought it was in good hands. Your father's.
My father stole for the purpose of making investments. You were his broker. Didn't you ever wonder where he was getting his money?
You're on dangerous ground, young man.
I know it, Mr. Martin, but we mean two different things. I'm not worried about slander. I'm worried about my skin. Nancy's and mine. We're in danger, and I think you know it.
Two hundred years ago, Samuel Johnson remarked, "There is nothing which has been contrived by man through which so much happiness is produced as by a good tavern or inn." True enough. All gone now. Swallowed up in progress, including Riverfront, an old New England inn which has now divested itself of a murder and its remains.
There are more surprises when I return shortly with Act 3.
You probably don't go to your True Value hardware store just to buy batteries. Hi, Pat Summerall. You probably pick up some while you're there, just because you happen to see them at the checkout counter. But now here's a good reason to go to your True Value hardware store just to buy batteries. Now you can get a four-pack of Rayovac C or D-size batteries for just 77 cents with a coupon from their Super 7 Value Circuiter. That's four C or D batteries for just 77 cents. You might not need batteries right now, but remember those times when you needed your flashlight and the batteries were dead? Or the time you were going to the beach with your portable radio and guess what? No batteries. Those are not the times to go to the store for batteries. Now's the time, while they're on sale. Get a four-pack of Rayovac C or D-size batteries for just 77 cents. That's with a coupon from the Super 7 Value Circuiter from participating True Value hardware stores. And remember, True Value, that is much more than just a name. It's their way of doing business. But
just think how nice it could be this coming Monday afternoon. You're feeling kind of smug. No last-minute desperation rushed for you because you've already slipped off to a See's candy shop to pick up a lovely heart-shaped box of See's candy for your very special Valentine. But if by some incredible circumstance you're caught without a gift at the last moment, See's candy shops will be open on Valentine's evening this Monday to send you home like a hero with a heart-shaped box of See's candy. She'll never know you bought it on 0 hour on D-Day. See's candy shops.
Mike Moran talks about Cairo Contact.
I've listened to all the different radio stations in Seattle, and I like most of the radio stations in Seattle. But I think middays between 10 and 3 o'clock, there is nobody that can come close to Gary Christensen. He's got the music, he's got news, he keeps it very light, it's very interesting, it's very intelligent. Plus, anything that's happening, he's got his finger on it.
Cairo Contact, middays on Cairo Radio.
I honestly believe he's the best in Seattle.
Other sins can only speak. Murder shrieks out. That metaphor by John Webster from his 16th century play, The Duchess of Malfi, best expresses the repugnance we feel when we learn that someone has been murdered. Murder cries to be solved. And Dr. Tom Large confronts one, that of his long-missing father. We still have three suspects, and one of them is the handyman at Riverfront, Rufus Boggs.
Lord Almighty, heaven help us. Oh, come on, open up.
Come in, Ruth.
Oh, Lil.
Ooh, what's wrong? You're white as the snow.
He was there all the time, Lil.
What are you talking about?
Tom's father.
You sound crazy. Now sit down and go slow. Now, what's this about Tom's father?
I found him in a room in the cellar.
Tom's father?
I was going round the inn. I was Riverside when they drove off, leaving all the lights on, and I went up to the door, and it wasn't closed tight. I opened it and called hello. And then me and Shark stepped inside and he began to bark and the hair went up on his back. Scared me stiff.
Go on.
He ran into that old hall closet and barked his head off. There's a trap door there. Did you know that, Lil?
No. A trap door to where?
Well, a room, sort of, under the common room. I had my flashlight, so I kneeled down and played the light around it. And I saw it. A skeleton.
Oh, my.
Stretched out on a cot.
Oh.
Would he give me a terrible turn.
A skeleton?
Yeah. Tom's father. It has to be. That's where he's been these 6 years.
And they drove away?
That's right. We'll have the police swarming all over the place soon, and there'll be questions like, what do I know about it? And I don't know nothing, Lil, nothing.
Neither do I. Now, you leave the talking to me. All I know is Tom's father bolted out of the house and slammed the door behind him. That's the last anybody's seen of him.
And I was in the barn all evening, except when I left my room to quiet Shark. And that's when I seen Mr. Martin drive away. His car, anyway.
Well, we better go back up there, Rufe.
What for?
Well, they found out the murder.
He was murdered.
Well, that's my guess. The man wouldn't just stay in there and starve himself to death.
No, I guess you're right.
Tom and the wife made the discovery, and you can bet whoever killed his father is going to do something about it.
Like what?
Like get that evidence out of there and then kill them. Now, we've got to stop that, Rofe.
What's the gun for?
Well, I may need it.
Why don't we wait for the police?
No, there's no time. There's no time at all.
There was a message at the hotel desk?
Mrs. Meggs telephoned. She has to see me, and she's driving into town.
When did she call?
Half an hour ago. Sure to be here any minute.
You were pretty rough on Mr. Martin, darling.
Yeah, but his role strikes me as funny. I mean, funny odd. Look, he was my father's friend and broker. He must have wondered where the money was coming from for those stocks my father bought. On the other hand, people up here pretty much mind their own business. Oh, it's all very confusing.
Not all of it. There was a murder.
Mrs. Meggs.
Ah.
Oh, Tom, the most dreadful things happened. Rufe's killed himself.
Oh, no.
Killed himself?
You found him out, and that's why he did it. You found the room and the skeleton.
Where did you find Rufe?
At the inn. The door was unlocked. I went in with Shark and turned on a light. And there he was, Rufe stretched out on the floor, dead, shot in the head. I near fainted. I ran back to my house. I didn't know what to do.
You didn't call the police?
Well, I phoned you. Well, then I chained Shark in the barn and went into Rufe's room. And I found the money.
He had hidden it in his room?
Well, not all of it. Just about $5,000. I can't believe it, Tom. I can't believe it. I brought it to give it to you.
Rufe Boggs. He was such a gentle old man. Gosh, I don't believe it either.
He killed himself because he was found out.
Yeah. Well, I guess that should clear up the mystery. You'd better stay here in the hotel, Mrs. Meggs. I'll get you a room.
No. I'll go back and be there when the police come. And the ambulance. I'm half out of my head with grief, Tom.
Yes, it's a terrible shock, isn't it? Well, we'll be out in the morning if we can get through.
Oh, they'll have the roads cleared. Never fear. Well, I don't know what to say. Good night.
That's a blow. Rufe Boggs. Gosh, I've known him since I was a little boy. Kind and patient. He was a little slow, but he was a good man. He must have gone off his trolley.
Mrs. Meggs is a liar.
Nancy, your imagination...
It's lucky for you I've got some. Ask yourself a few questions, darling. From what you remember, did Rufe ever go into that inn?
Oh, well, rarely. But, he saw us drive off, and maybe we left a light on or something.
So he goes in, finds the skeleton, and shoots himself?
Well, that's what Mrs. Meggs says.
His dog is always with him?
Sure.
So the dog went into the inn with him?
Go on.
Then how come Mrs. Meggs heard the dog howling outside?
Yeah.
Mrs. Meggs had said goodnight to us. Why did she want to return to the inn? Not for the reason she gave, Tom. I think Rufe told her what he found, and they returned to the inn together. And she shot him.
Oh, that's crazy.
Is it? What about this? Where did she find the $5,000?
In his room.
Just like that? She could walk into Rufe's room and just like that find $5,000? If he'd stolen the money, he'd have hidden it.
Yeah, well, all right, that's the point. Her story does sound kind of pat, doesn't it?
Sure, because it's a lie. Darling, she murdered Rufe just as she murdered your father 6 years ago.
All right, look, just saying it doesn't make it so. I mean, how do we prove it?
Two ways. The police can check on the gun used to kill Rufe, and they can also help us to find the rest of the money. I kept asking myself, where did it all go?
Well, for all I know, it just flew away.
Oh, that's what I think, too.
Are you serious?
Very.
The money flew away?
Yes. You give me a day with the police, and I think I can find that money. And when I do, we'll put Mrs. Meggs behind bars for life.
Nancy, where have you been? I've been worried to death.
I told you where I'd be, darling, with the police. You want to hear something interesting?
Go ahead.
Every time your father placed a stock order, he placed a similar one for Mr. Martin and paid for all of it.
What?
That's right. I'll make a guess. Your father and Martin were in collusion. Your father used your grandmother's money with Martin's tacit approval.
You mean the two of them were dipping into the old woman's funds?
That's what it looks like to me. Your grandmother demanded an accounting, and to repay her, your father robbed his bank.
Oh, gosh, it gets worse and worse.
But it's going to get better and better, darling, because the police have supplied me with two very helpful pieces of information.
The gun?
Yes. They traced the gun. Rufus Boggs never had a handgun, as far as the police can tell, but old man Meggs did, and he had a permit to carry it. The permit expired when he died, but the gun was never turned in. It was Meggs's gun which was used to murder Rufus.
Well, that should clinch it.
Without question. She murdered Ruf. But what about your father?
Were the police helpful there?
Oh, very. Did you know that Mrs. Meggs has a sister living in Fort Lauderdale?
No.
Well, she has, and they are very regular correspondents. Remember what you said, Tom? That maybe the money just flew away?
Yeah.
Well, it did. Can't you guess?
You're telling me that...
Exactly. Now, let's call on her and see if she doesn't fall apart.
Well, it's still beyond me. Killing your father and then taking his own life.
Is that what you think he did, Mrs. Meggs?
Why, it's plain as the nose on your face, Tom. But why would a man shoot himself unless he was guilty of some terrible crime?
I guess you're right. I've decided to sell the estate, Mrs. Meggs, because I'm tied down in Boston and I just couldn't manage the place from there. Oh. I'm sorry about that. You've lived here...
Rent-free for over 30 years. That was part of the agreements when Meggs and me moved out here.
Yes, I know. Well, if you would like to stay on...
No, thanks. I don't want charity.
Have you thought about what you're going to do?
Well, Meggs left me a little insurance and I kept it tucked away. I might move to where it's a little warmer than up here. Arizona, maybe.
Not Florida?
Pardon me?
Isn't that where your sister is?
Why do you ask?
Your sister confessed that there are 5 savings accounts in Fort Lauderdale banks in your name, Mrs. Banks. And the police here in White River want you to explain how it happens that there is a small fortune waiting for you down there.
Over $15,000.
It's no business of theirs.
Oh, yes, it is. I found $15,000 in the stove in the sealed room. You placed 5 more where you said Ruf had hidden it, $20,000. That plus the $15,000 makes $35,000. Half the amount my father stole from the merchant's bank.
How do you explain that, Mrs. Meggs? And how do you explain that the bullet that killed Rufus Boggs was fired by your handgun?
My handgun? I never in my life owned a handgun.
Your husband did, and he didn't fire that shot from the grave, did he? You murdered Ruf to save your skin, Mrs. Meggs, so you'd better tell me and tell me quick what happened 6 years ago to my father.
I didn't touch him.
He didn't crush his own skull, Mrs. Meggs.
Martin killed him. His friend, Martin.
Uh-huh. That's more like it. Go on.
Your father came to give your grandmother money. She turned him away. He had the money with him. Martin spoke to me, said he'd divide it. Half for him and half for me. I was afraid.
I'll just bet you were.
Well, then he struck your father and killed him. We hid the body in the sealed room. And
from time to time, you dipped into your half of the money and sent it to your sister for deposit.
And you murdered Ruf to cover the old crime.
Well, I didn't know what to do. I was crazy with fear. I just lost my head.
I doubt that, Mrs. Meggs. You deliberately murdered the old man.
Tom, please, Be merciful.
If you and Martin don't hang for the crime, the court will be merciful. You're cold-blooded killers. You deserve to die.
The thief who understands his business never steals in his own neighborhood. An old Arab precept. But greed and opportunity usually go hand in hand. What a killer does not understand are the consequences of premeditated murder. Not for the victim, but for his relatives and friends. There are degrees of crime, from petty thievery to grand larceny. But murder is the worst and most repugnant. I will draw the curtain on the recluse when I return shortly.
The 1977 Buick Regal. It comes with Buick's terrific V6 engine. It carries six people and lots of Buick comfort. It's lean, it's maneuverable in city traffic. It's the most luxurious mid-size car Buick builds. Yeah, this new Regal is pretty much everything a car should be, except for one thing. It isn't yours yet, but it can be. Just see your Buick dealer for a test drive. Soon.
Hey, what's gotten into you lately anyway? Dust? Vapors? Gases? Toxins?
Watch what you breathe on the job. Be careful of air full of residue. If you want to keep working, remember this. Your lungs must keep on working too.
Use your head. Save your lungs. Your local lung association considers it a matter of life and breath.
Tom Lodge and his mother had lived for 6 years under a pall of shame. But then two deaths lifted the curtain, and the truth was revealed. What Tom's father did was wrong. What was done to him was worse. I can report with pleasure that Mrs. Meggs and Martin were sentenced to prison for life. And for all I know, they are still there, still a burden to taxpayers like you and me. Our cast included Tony Roberts, Patricia Elliott, Francis Sternhagen, and Court Benson. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Now, where shall we go, Cap?
Down the steps behind the trees. There's a little piazza.
I'm so worried about you, darling. Maybe you really are sick. You just don't sound like yourself. Your voice is so strange. You're not Cab.
We won't need this champagne anymore. Or this special masquerade. No, I am not your Mr. Goodwin.
Who are you?
Just a man with a purpose. You can see that I have exchanged the champagne glasses for this.
A gun?
Which I would not hesitate to use. Lover as you are, I am a desperate man, so keep walking. Across the driveway and around behind the Lombardy poplars. That's it. Don't try to do anything foolish.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Do you know the rules when it comes to trading commodities? Some of the more successful traders don't always play by the established rules, and their story appeared a short time back in Commodities Magazine, the story of how the young millionaires trade commodities. The Clayton Brokerage Company of St. Louis has developed a seminar based on that article with the full permission of the publishers of Commodities Magazine. And you're invited to attend any of the four seminars in this area free. Tuesday the 15th, they'll be at Tacoma's Roadway Inn at 7:30.
Wednesday, they'll hold two seminars in the Olympic Hotel at 4:30 and 7:30. And Thursday the 19th, they'll hold the final seminar at Everett's Roadway Inn at 7:30. All the seminars are free, but space is limited. So call now for reservations. The number is toll-free, 1-800-562-9852. And when you call, be sure to ask for the number for all the complete and up-to-date commodity prices from Clayton Brokerage in Bellevue. That number again, 1-800-562-9852. Call now.
KIRO, Seattle, the news authority.
CBS News. Seven charges have been lodged against the gunman who held a mortgage company executive hostage for almost 3 days in an Indianapolis apartment. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Police, giving only the barest details at this point, told CBS News that 44-year-old Anthony Karitsis is being held on a kidnapping warrant, as well as charges of physical injury while in the commission of a felony, disorderly conduct, armed robbery, obtaining signature by threat, commission of a felony while armed, and crime of violence while armed. His hostage, 42-year-old Richard Hall, was taken on a stretcher from the apartment house in which he had been held. Hospital authorities say he's in excellent condition. The 62-hour siege ended when Karitsis walked out of the apartment, a sawed-off shotgun wired to the neck of Hall, and conducted a frequently profane news conference in which he detailed his accusation that the mortgage company treated him shoddily in refusing to extend the deadline on a $130,000 loan. Police took Karitsis into custody despite a promise of immunity from prosecution, saying he had violated the immunity agreement by not releasing his hostage earlier. Authorities say Karitsis will be taken to an Indianapolis hospital following police processing. CBS News continues following this message.
I was a peaceful, ordinary citizen, brutally tortured by the Gestapo, hounded by the British, chased by the French, and to survive, I, Thomas Lyven, was reluctantly transformed into Europe's most notorious undercover agent.
Read this incredible story in the Monte Cristo cover-up, a powerful thriller by one of the world's best red fiction writers, Simmel. Over 2 million copies in print. The Monte Cristo cover-up in paperback from Popular Library.
Hello, world. Denny Bracken from Meet the Cook, heard Monday through Saturdays right here on the CBS Radio Net. Now, tomorrow, cooking expert Sue Cranwinkle's going to drop by with a recipe that half of the country could make out of doors these days.
Oh, but, Denny, this is a sherbet, which is just perfect after a nice, heavy, warm meal that we often have in the wintertime. It's so light and so tasty, you'll love it.
Well, we'll bundle up and blend a cup. Me and you and a gal named Sue and a raspberry sherbet. That's the serving tomorrow on Meet the Cook right here on CBS.
A UN Security Council committee is investigating a British report that the Soviet Union, Czechoslovakia, Bulgaria, East Germany, and Romania are trading with Rhodesia quietly, using Swiss firms as go-betweens. The Soviet Union and Romania have denied the charge. Secretary of State Cyrus Vance Thursday urged a Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee to approve repeal of the so-called Byrd Amendment, under which U.S. firms can buy chromium from Rhodesia despite U.N. sanctions. Rhodesian Prime Minister Ian Smith says repeal of the Byrd Amendment would not strangle his country's economy. Chris Morton has that story in Salisbury.
Smith told reporters on his return from Cape Town and talks with Premier John Forster that repeal of the amendment wouldn't stop Rhodesian trade in the strategic metal.
There are people who believe that by repealing this they are going to bring us to unease economically. I can tell you without any shadow of doubt they will fail.
Smith admitted, however, that such a move would harm his country and would cause hardship and unemployment. But he also pointed out that the ones to suffer most would, as usual, be the Africans. It has been rumored here that the last time America embargoed Rhodesian chrome, it was bought by the Russians, who sold their inferior metal to the States at twice the market price. Chris Morton for CBS News, Salisbury, Rhodesia.
United Nations Secretary General Kurt Waldheim met with Israeli Prime Minister Rabin for 2 hours Thursday in Jerusalem. After it was reported.